Hi, everybody. This is the Georgia Songbirds, and we're here with Mr. Nathan Morgan. I met Nathan actually at a writer's round in McDonough with a buddy of mine, Kenny. Had him come on a show. He's a great singer-songwriter. So introduce yourself, Nathan.
Yeah, what's going on, guys? I appreciate you having me on this. Thank you so much. And the Georgia Songbird podcast, man. I'm glad to be here. Nathan Morgan, singer, songwriter, guitar player, husband, dad, a few other things. But yeah, just Georgia, born and raised on the south side of the Atlanta area, and recently relocated to the Knoxville, Tennessee area. But Georgia will always be home. So, the inspiration of Georgia music is it's always just been something it's been a huge influence in my life ever since I can remember. So, that's just led to bigger and better things. So glad to be here, man. Thank you.
Of course. So tell everybody, because you mentioned some of the influence and stuff, who kind of influenced you to pick up the guitar and start writing songs and playing music?
It's crazy because like nobody else in my family plays guitar. I'll start with that. I'm the only person in my family that actually plays. But growing up, as a kid on, Saturday and Sunday mornings when mom and dad were both home from work, on the weekend, we always had music playing, whether it was a tape deck or a record player. Later CDs came along. I'm showing my age. But the cool thing about it was we had everything from Stax and Motown, Wilson Pickett, Aretha Franklin, Otis Redding to Southern Rock, of course, Allman Brothers. Atlanta Rhythm Section, Lynyrd Skynyrd, of course, probably my biggest influence. And then as we got older, we kind of expanded that into outlaw country, older classical country. It just all kind of blended at one point with me and all the great guitar players, of course, Hendrix, Stevie Ray Vaughan. I got into that at a young age, probably my early preteen years, and then went backwards from there into Howlin' Wolf and Hubert Sumlin territory. Of course, Robert Johnson, all those iconic blues players. But then I expanded from there into country and rock. And of course, we could talk more about that too. But it almost seems like my heroes and I, had all the same influences. So it's kind of cool to come to see it all come full circle.
Yeah, there was some of my favorite guitarists that I love that I grew up like with Eric Clapton and Santana. And it's funny you mentioned Robert Johnson. That name comes up a lot lately. And I don't remember if I did it there at Kenny's or not, that I wrote a song inspired by Robert Johnson. Because God, if you don't know who Robert Johnson is, he's a blues man who like disappeared for a year and then came back and could play like crazy. And everybody thought he just sold his soul to the devil.
Yeah.
I was like on fire in his veins. And I can't remember if I played it there, but that's it's funny that these same names pop up over and over, and it just shows you that the how music can last, good music will last forever.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's timeless. And whether you're talking about the Deep South or you're talking about even classical guitar or classical music, music endures and it leaves a legacy to anybody who hears it and can appreciate it. And I think the appreciation is almost more important than just the being exposed to it.
Now, do you remember the first song you ever heard on the radio?
First song I ever heard on the radio, man, it may have been on the actual, Atlanta FM radio, probably something on like Z93 or something for all the Atlanta folks, Z93.
Exactly.
It may have been Creedence Clearwater Revival, or it could have been ZZ Top. I don't know, but one of the first things I remember hearing on tape on record was probably "Land of a Thousand Dances" by Wilson Pickett, and that always got me going.
It's so funny you said Z93. I remember that the first song that I remember hearing on radio was the Eagles' "Heartache Tonight," and it was on Z93. And they used to have this little they used to do this thing where it was like a battle of the bands, and it was like they'd play certain songs and they put like Skynyrd against Zeppelin, and then people would vote. And I love that because it was so cool. Just I mean, it's all subjective anyway, but the fact of it was cool. I love competitions, as people should know anyway. I do the Georgia versus series, which is Georgia versus right now Pennsylvania. I do the countdown where you vote for your favorites. I just love friendly competitions. And even with music, I remember that. I remember sitting here cleaning the pool out by mama's house, and I was maybe in my teens, Maybe a little younger, or teen tree or younger. And they're playing that, and it was Skynyrd and against Zeppelin, and they were trying to who the debate of Freebird versus Stairway to Heaven always comes up. It was so fun.
It comes up in multiple circles anytime you talk about music, definitely. Those battle weekends, heck, now we can talk about that for an hour or so, but those battle weekends or the Southern Fried weekends that they used to do, they play all the Southern rock music, everything from Skynyrd to Stillwater with Mindbender. You hear all the same songs every time they do it, but it was always cool to hear the songs.
I think now the they changed Z93, I think it's a talk thing now, but now the classic rock is like 97.1 The River. And I was listening the other day, and it was Stone Temple Pilots came on. And I'm like, that's not classic rock. And then I started doing the math. I was like, oh, I guess it is now.
Yeah, it is, man. It's weird how the numbers start to increase as the years go by. It's like, oh wow, that came out mid-90s. It's like that is classic rock, I guess. Now
30
you
years
start to
ago.
see, yeah, you start to see classic car tags on mid-90s Camaros. That's kind of
Man, I was sitting there thinking when I was a kid, I remember mama taking me to the bus stop and we would listen to her favorite station. I don't even remember the I think it was 94.1, but they played then they played like 50s music. And so she was jamming out to the 50s and I was like, oh, I get appreciation of it now, but I got so tired of listening to the 50s. I just want to listen to that, to the 80s and the grunge and whatever was going on at the time. And then I was sitting there with the kids the other day listening to the 80s. I'm like, I have gone full circle. I got tipped by my mom. I'm listening to the 80s. The 80s for us, or for me, is like the 50s for her.
yeah, absolutely. And again, it's just like it's a shock factor when you realize that it's the same amount of time. It's the same time that's separating you and your kids, and they're both looking at you, look at your parents like, what is this? And your kids are looking at you like, what is this?
And I look at them when they play their music. Like, what is that?
it's vice versa.
My daughter was listening to Insane Clown Posse, and I know who they are because I remember them from when I was earlier, like wrestling. So I was like, "Why are you listening to that?" She says, "I like it." I was like, "Really? The Insane Clown Posse?" I said, "Come on."
I think it speaks to the going back to the enduring legacy of just talking about classic rock or classic country, man. That my two boys, I have an 8-year-old and a 3-year-old, soon to be 9 and 4, and like they'll both be in the car, and I'll have some of my music on, and we'll be listening to Southbound, by the Allman Brothers, or Georgia Rhythm by the Atlanta Rhythm Section. And I look back through, and they're bobbing their heads and then air guitar, air drums, and it's just like it still moves them. And that gives me hope for the future.
Right. Put it in the air tonight. Nobody goes to that song without playing drums. They just don't.
Exactly.
That's my, I think my dream as a songwriter is to have a song that somebody will do that to, you know, like part of the song, they're doing a lead or they're doing a drum solo, whatever they're doing. I think that's what we kind of hope for as artists and songwriters is music that touches people that they always will remember.
Absolutely, the iconic riff, the iconic drum fill. If nothing else, man, even if the subject matter of the song's not, the deepest thing that you've heard all day, it's still that riff that gets your attention. And the instrumental factor of that music speaks for itself. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so guys, we're gonna listen to some of his music in a minute, but Nathan has some, I listen to him, he has really good songs, good songwriter. It's good story stuff. I like that. But I'm with you. I'm like rock songs, if you dig into the lyrics, they're more poetic than they're anything. It's more about the guitars and the solos and the feeling of the music. You go to country, it's more about the storytelling and or it used to be about the storytelling and that. And then like with pop music, it was more about the earworm melody that just the beat and the that would pop into your ear.
The earworm, I like that. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Yeah,
Yes.
that contagious, gets in your head.
Oh, I can't st I don't know about you, but I wake up sometimes with some of the weirdest songs playing in my head.
Same here, man.
I wonder if
We are
I'm
not
just
alone.
dreaming or something. I've got a see my now yeah, another since we kind of talk about competition stuff. Are you Samsung or Apple guy?
An Apple guy.
Okay, see, I'm a Samsung. My wife gives me crap. Everybody in the family here is Apple but me. But I get woken up every morning. I have my alarm clock. Well, with Samsung, you can, like, I have a Spotify account. You can set your Spotify account as your wake up call, and you can put on a playlist and it will play it. So I have a wake up happy playlist that I play every morning when I wake up, when I take the kids to school. My alarm goes off, and it's usually like 80s fun songs, and it's just fun songs. I didn't even make the playlist. I just play it because it's happy. And every morning it wakes me up, and I'm sitting there and I'm singing, I'm dancing, and my wife will too, but she also knows that's when it's time for her to go to work because my alarm went off.
Man, you have so many more options on a Samsung phone than you do an Apple, but I just find it's simple and does one thing, and I like that thing. So it's like I'll stick with
Yeah, she's been trying to pull me over to the dark side. I said, "Come on over to the
it.
Apple, then we can just drop everything. I can send you AirDrop." I said, "What you want is you want to be able to track me. I know what you want. You want to find my phone. I know exactly what you're trying to do."
Tighten that grip.
We've got twins that are 14 years old, and my oldest is 26. He just got married, but so we've got it on their phones. That's fine. They're kids. I got to
Absolutely.
know where they're at.
Sure.
Now you said your kids
Especially.
are nine, about to be 9 and 4, right?
Yeah, I've still got two little guys, but one not so little anymore. But yeah, the kids, I definitely understand that, especially once they get a phone and they're turned loose in the world and or get a little more freedom. You want to have that security, but also know where they are and keep that leash just a little bit tight on them for the time being, just because it can be a scary place out there.
Oh
So
yeah. And I have one of my the twins is a girl, so that's kind of my I think God's plan that he's making amends for me when I was a kid. So now I got to go through everything that I did, but as to the other aspect of having a girl. So if anybody tells you God doesn't have a sense of humor, I'm gonna tell you he does.
oh, absolutely. I'm a firm believer.
See, because she's into wrestling, she's a wrestler. She actually started high school wrestling this year. And so we've been to a couple of tournaments, and everything that she does is everything. I mean, she's so much like me that it's scary. And it's like, oh my God, it's like looking in a mirror, but this is what I would be like if I was a girl. And I told her, you're gonna have a hard life. I'm telling you right now.
I wrestled in high school, and that was a lot of fun. I always enjoyed that, and we didn't have any girls on the team, but a lot of times you had girls who were like the quote unquote managers of the team. They basically kind of managed all the gear and kind of kept everybody in line because everybody listened to the manager. So that's cool. She doing pretty good? She enjoying it?
Oh, she loves it. She absolutely, she is her first year. She's 5 and 7. I've been keeping track of her wins and losses.
There you go.
She just had a tournament Friday night. So we went there after school. So from 5 until like 11 at night, we were there. She was going, she placed third in the tournament. So she was so excited. That's her first one. And she's been taking on her, she's trying to get all her friends to do it because now they have an actual wrestling team for the girls. This is the first year. And when you go to these tournaments, I didn't realize how many girls wanted to wrestle. There is some schools there. That's it. That's all they have. It's like 10 to 15 girls on the team. And
Oh,
it's
wow.
pretty cool because they're in a situation now where these girls, colleges are starting to have female wrestling teams as well. And they're women wrestling, but they don't have wrestlers. So they're giving scholarships and they're helping. They get a boy scholarship, they give a girl scholarship. And there's so many more opportunities for them as female wrestlers to embrace that mentality and get an education. Because her dream right now is she wants to be a professional wrestler. She loves WWE. Again, this is mini me. She's sitting there watching wrestling with me since she was a kid. And so that's her dream. She wants to do professional wrestling. So, well, you need to try amateur just to get some of the basics. And it's not going to hurt you to know moves that you can do. All that the professional, we know, is choreographed and they do stuff, but they still got to make it sell it. They still got to make it look right.
That's right.
And so she's doing that and she absolutely loves it. Her first meet, though, the first girl she ever wrestled was the number one seed in the tournament. And that girl tore her up. I mean, she just beat her butt. And then the next tournament she went to, her friend who just started too, her first year, the girl actually broke her femur. She in the middle of the match, she went to get slammed and I guess she planted and her femur just popped. up toward her hip. And I mean, she was laying there for 30 minutes on the mat. They had to give her some morphine and they wanted to set it, but the coaches said, don't you dare set that here, because if you set that leg here, we're going to have half these girls drop out of this tournament.
Oh my gosh.
So they're going to, but yeah, she's, I just thought, I thought she, the way it looked, because it was so high, is I thought she just dislocated it from her hip, you know, like it popped out of socket. But no,
Yeah.
she broke her femur. And so she was shower
That's,
shaking after that. But she still wrestles. She still loves it.
geez, that's intense, man. I mean, yeah, the wrestling thing. I grew up watching wrestling. You love all those classic wrestlers, but you're right, getting that foundation, man. You know, guys like Kurt Angle, you know, Brock Lesnar, all these MMA guys that are coming in now and wrestling, vice versa. It's,
Oh,
you
yeah.
still have to have that foundation to be able to the athletic ability, I should say. And then, like you said, Jesse Ventura, one time he called it physical theater. I thought that was the perfect way to sum it up, you know.
That's
You
what I
always
remember
call
going through school. I was Jesse the Body.
it. That's awesome.
I got the coaches always called me that. I knew they liked wrestling too. Like I said, now you take me down a wrestling podcast, Nathan. I'm telling you, this I could turn this into a wrestling podcast.
Heck yeah,
I
man.
love wrestling, and I me and my drummer talked about starting our own like a rock and wrestling podcast. Bring on some musical guests and some put them, because music and wrestling has always been kind of together. I mean, look at Chris
Oh,
Jericho.
absolutely.
At any entrance, they put entrance in there. I mean, Triple H has Motorhead as his entrance. It's always been entwined.
Yeah, even the stuff that like Jimmy Hart would write back in the day, you know, for all the wrestlers, like, you know, Honky Tonk Man, you know, get Rick Derringer to do Hulk Hogan's theme, you know, Real American. And yeah, that the crossover there is incredible. And all the podcasts that I listen to that talk about professional wrestling history, there's always something about music that comes up. And they always have bands or artists that come into WrestleMania and vice versa. You know, it's a huge crossover opportunity, definitely.
Yeah, because you talk about with Jesse Ventura said the is it's musical, it's sort of theater, right? It's like, what do you, how
Yeah.
do you say it? It was
Physical theater.
physical theater. Well, if you go to a theater or you go to a movie, they have a score. They have music with it. It's the same thing for these wrestlers. They come out to a music and they're, it's like it's more of, I remember when I was a kid going to the Omni watching Dusty Rhodes and him coming out with Judge a Book by a Cover, you know, Hank Williams Jr. song. It was done with Hank Jr. and Huey Lewis. And then one of my favorite tag teams was the Road Warriors, and they would come out to Iron Man. And that was just you, when that music hit, you knew they were coming.
Man, oh God, that gives me chill bumps thinking about that because I always remember that. And, bad Leroy Brown, you know, like there was a wrestler in like Mid-South territory that had that song as his entrance, you know. Yeah, oh man, but yeah, we could talk about that forever because
See,
that never gets old. That's a weak point for me as far as being a fan. And man.
okay. Do you remember? We'll get the music here. I promise you a second, but I have to ask because you're kind of in the same age group I am, and you used to watch it. Do you remember? I think it was on Channel 69 at the time. It was an antenna. It wasn't called 69. I don't remember what it was called at the time, but they would have, and I think it was Friday nights. It might have been Saturday. They would have wrestling all day, and you would watch like all the old territories that would wrestle. You'd see the WCW would have it, and then you'd keep going, and they'd have like the Mid South and the Midwest, because you see the Von Erichs and the Freebirds. And
Yeah.
it was Bonnie, her name was Bonnie, and I can't remember the guy's name. But they would talk, and then they would take you over to these other wrestling shows.
They would hop around territories. I vaguely remember that. But yeah, the because that's where I first like knew who Jim Cornette was and Jerry Jarrett and you know Jerry Lawler and all the stuff up in like the Minnesota territory, like where the Road Warriors came from, where like where Jesse Ventura came from, Rick Rude, all those guys.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, the Von Erichs, especially now, I love me some Texas Tornado growing up. I always loved the Muscleheads, you know, Texas Tornado, Ultimate Warrior Force, the Warlord. You know, because my dad was a competitive amateur bodybuilder, so he knew a lot of those guys who would come into, you know, to the gym in Atlanta anytime they were in town. You know, so.
That's so cool. That I remember being a kid and you could rush to like the rail and stick your hand out and like holler their name and they would touch you. It was like the greatest thing in the world. I took my daughter to her to, well, she actually took me last year for Christmas. She bought me tickets to a WWE house show. And we were there at the end, and the last match was like Seth Rollins and I think Austin Theory. And so he was coming by. She ran to the she got to run because everybody had left. So she'd ran to the rail, and Seth Rollins like gave her a high five twice, and she thought that was the coolest thing ever. And I had flashbacks of me being a kid and like Lex Luger and Elegante and
Yeah.
Sting and all them just hitting your hand. I was like, oh, it's full
Dude, that
circle.
rush does not change, man. That rush
No.
does not change. Seeing Bill Goldberg beat Hogan like for the world title at the Georgia Dome as like a 10-year-old kid. I'm sitting like 10 rows back with my dad, like seeing that happen. That rush does not go away. Meeting those guys, or heck, even meeting your musical heroes that I've had the pleasure to do over the years, that rush is exactly the same. It's exactly the same. It's that intimate connection for just a brief second.
Yeah, because it's something you achieve to do. I mean, like music, who are some of your like if you could meet somebody musically that you always wanted to talk to and just kind of get their feel or get some words from them, who would that be?
Man, honestly, I had the pleasure to meet Billy Gibbons a few months back. We opened. I was on the road with the band that had hired me to go out and play some dates for them, just as a guitar player. And we opened for ZZ Top in Knoxville at the Tennessee Theater, and then Memphis at the Orpheum Theater the next night. And I finally got a chance to talk to Billy for maybe 10 minutes, and we talked about guitars and just. It's in that moment where you can think of 10 million things to say in the moment, or leading up to that moment, you can think of 10 million things to say, but in the moment, it's just you're just stumbling over your words almost because you can't believe it's happening. So I would honestly love to pick his brain for probably an hour or so. I mean, if I could just buy his time and just sit him down for an hour. Him or Eric Clapton, of course. I'll tell you who else, man. Somebody like Paul Shaffer, who's been in like the production game for so long, like how he's put these amazing bands together and done things like the Tonight Show for so long, or the Late Show with David Letterman. People who are not only musical icons, but just icons in the music business. To learn how they just built a legacy is that. Don Was is another one. He's the bass player, the guy that always wears the big hat, the glasses with the beard. He can never really. He's really conspicuous looking on stage, but he's always the bass player. Like he always did the tribute shows, like for Greg Allman and for Skinner and Willie Nelson and all that kind of stuff. He always puts all that together. He's the guy they call. Or Tom Bukovac, he's another Nashville session guy who plays on everybody's record, goes on tour with everybody, and he's the guy they call. So learning how those people got into those roles, what they did right, what they did wrong, is something I've developed more of an appreciation for, probably as I've gotten older. But of course, in the back of my mind, being able to sit down with Bill Gibbons, Eric Clapton, all the guys who are, of course, who are still alive, to be able to reflect back on their own lives and kind of give me some pointers, that's what I would love to do.
Yeah, that's a good group of people. Well, let's get to your music. Let's hear one of your songs. Like I said, we get talking. I told you we will get sidetracked on the show. It happens every time. And I would apologize for it, but I'm not going to because you guys by now know who I am. So I'm gonna pull up the screen. Can you see this, Nathan?
Yeah, I can.
Okay. So what's the first song that you want to share with everyone?
Let's do Woke Up Dead, man.
Okay.
That's probably one of the harder rockers tunes on the record. Yeah, let's go with that one.
Okay. Now I'm a songwriter too, so I like to hear these stories. Is there a story behind Woke Up Dead?
Yeah, absolutely. It's trying to tell a few different stories about kind of the darker side of life, unfortunately. Things you read about on the internet, or things you hear about in the news, from different vantage points. Yeah, people in various scenarios over the course of their life, whether it's drugs are involved, or infidelity, or fraud, like even something like bank fraud. I mean, just all things that I've heard about growing up, all the famous criminals or famous drug kingpins, or I mean, there's just so much kind of background history, and picking out three random names of people to put in the song, just to, so it's not about any one of them in particular. But yeah, it's just heavy guitars, heavy a lot of heavy instrumentation, but you'll hear the Sun of the Sun studio influence in there, or the Sun studio sound, I should say, because that's where all this was recorded, and we can talk about that too. But yeah, absolutely, man. It just tells you a couple of different stories about the things you read about, hear about, and kind of the dark reality of life sometimes.
Okay. What I'm going to do, Nathan, is I'm going to mute us and play it. I know you can't see me, but you should be able to see like a, on an uninvited or not uninvite, but unmute. I'll send you that after the song. But this way, because I know on
Sure.
my end, I have dogs and stuff that's going to bark, but I want to hear the music. So I'm going to mute us and play that. I know you can't give me a thumbs up, but if you can see the screen, then you should be able to hear it.
As she pulled into the lot in her new Mercedes Benz, far across town, so far away from friends, she met the devil there to get something for her head. Too much of a good thing, Mary woke up dead. Jesse had to have her, she was in his bones. Another man's lovely wife, another man's happy home. He spied her from the shadows as she undressed for bed. He didn't see the husband, Jesse woke up dead.
That is a good one.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
That is my kind of Southern rock style of music in your face that I love. That cl it's not almost to call it classic, but I can see the I can hear the classical influences in it.
Man, that's the sound I was going for. And again, that's one of the reasons why I picked Sun Studios to go to throw it back a good ways. And that guitar sound you're hearing is a is a Gibson Les Paul through a 17 watt tube amp that's just on about to die, and it's just screaming as hard as it'll scream. That's what you're hearing. That's what I wanted. So just raw and simple.
Yeah, see, is that what you kind of classify yourself, you think, as? I mean, I know a lot of people would say genre is weird, but like you think you're more that Southern outlaw rock kind of style.
Definitely the Southern rock, man. And that comes out of more of an appreciation for the music rather than the lifestyle. I do not pretend one bit to be this hard living guy with a checkered past by any means, because so many of my heroes, man, they just what they came from, what they endured in their own personal life growing up, and even as they got famous. I have been very blessed to not really have to experience any small percentage of that in my own personal life. So that kind of music that I love, it comes out of what I see in other parts of life, rather than my own, maybe. Now, there are songs on this record that are direct from my own personal experience, but and new songs that I'm writing that trying to draw more on that personal experience, but also still trying to pay tribute to the music I love at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, I always call my music heathen music when we do heat, because it's that kind of style, or mutt music, because it's a mixture of everything. People love
Sure.
mutts, right? Now,
Yeah, man, stuff he wrote and the stuff I heard when we met over there at Macon Street Taco with the songwriter night, that was yeah, it speaks to that definitely, and I can hear it. I can hear your influences and your way of writing, definitely.
thank you. Yeah, I'll let you at the end of it. I'll let you hear off air one of the how the band sounds when we do it. Because you're like me. I love that rock. It's hard to do rock stuff as a singer songwriter when you're just up there with your guitar.
Absolutely.
I mean, you're a better guitar player than me. I can play, but I can't do the lead stuff. And that's kind of what you need when you're doing the rock, when you're playing it out live. You need lead. You need lead music to kind of follow it. And it as a band, it takes itself a little bit. It's easier to hear it as a band than I think as a singer songwriter. And some of it, I heard your stuff. I was listening to it. It was good. And then I'm listening to this now. And guys, I wish you'd have seen him live. He's really, really good live. He played Eddie's Attic. I missed that one, but I did. Like I said, we did play up at Kenny's and at McDonough. And to hear the difference is kind of what you're going for. I can hear it. Like there, I just thought it was really good. Now with the band and your style, like okay, now I know what he's trying to do with it. And like I said, I just love that kind of music anyway.
Well, thanks, man. You definitely you're doing just fine, by the way, on the guitar playing. So don't sell yourself short by any means. One of the things I've always kind of tried not to do anytime I pick up an acoustic guitar is play it like an electric. Goodness knows I've been guilty of that early on, but luckily I've been blessed to be taught by guys who are way better guitar players than I am. You have a different approach to an acoustic than you do an electric guitar, period. And it's almost kind of a way for me to test out how good these songs really can go over and how good they really are if I can pull it off on acoustic. If I can do Woke Up Dead on acoustic guitar and it doesn't sound like I'm about to beat the guitar against a wall, then I think I'm doing okay.
It reminds me, like I said, that's you know the when they used to do the Unplugged, like the VH1 Unplugged series, and you'd have like Stone Temple Pilots or Creed, whoever came in, and they would do all that stuff acoustically, and you could tell, because you're right, 100%, if it sounds good on acoustic, imagine what's going to sound like with the production.
Oh yeah, absolutely, man. That Alice in Chains Unplugged episode.
Oh
I mean, I'm not
yeah.
even a huge Alice in Chains fan, but the way those songs come across acoustic, I'm like, I don't want to hear the electric version. It's just like I just want to hear the acoustic version because it's so good. And the way they rearrange the songs, Clapped and Unplugged is another one, of course. It forces the band to really rethink how these songs are going to sound.
Well, I think as a listener, you get lost when you listen to music on a radio. You get lost in the production. Usually, the first thing you hear of a song is the production, because it starts off with a riff or drum, whatever it starts off with. But in those acoustic settings, you realize that rock music, like I said before, it's poetic, but it's also dark, and you kind of get lost in those stories when you're just jamming out and doing air guitars. You know, you're not listening to the words; you're just listening to the music. And when they did those unplugged stuff like that, it showed you the actual aspect of it. They already had fans, they could do whatever they want to, but they brought in now they brought in the storytelling, and people started digging into it even more.
Absolutely. And when you make people listen like that, because they can't mosh, they can't get up and just jam, they can't necessarily shake their hips back and forth in the aisles. I mean, maybe they can to some you know, some song, but yeah, like you force people to sit and listen, and it's that's one, it speaks to your power as an artist, but also it speaks to the power of the song, and knowing that you have those fans who are willing to sit and listen is another cool thing to have,
Yeah.
definitely.
I was kind of always envious of songwriters who could sit there with just a guitar and take over a room and play. And because I mean, people want to dance and they want to move. I get that. But there's some things like when you do a sad song, I know songwriters have a tendency to just write sad songs. But if you got to think, when you write a sad song, you've got to make it something that nobody's heard before. And it's hard because everything's already been said. So you got to find a new way to say things. And
Right.
one of the people that come to mind when I'm thinking of this is Chris Cornell did Nothing Compares to You. He did his cover, his own version of it.
Yeah.
And when he started playing that and singing, I mean, he was in a studio and it had to reverb a little bit of effects on it. It was just acoustic. I was like, oh my God. I knew he could sing. I did not realize how much that man could sing.
Just by himself, man. Yeah,
Yeah.
it's haunting. Yeah, absolutely. And again, you know his better, like you've heard of it, heard his background, ultimately passed away from the issues he was dealing with personally, and it just increases the power of that. And even that, it doesn't matter if he's covering a song or if he's doing Black Hole Sun acoustic or something like that. It's just powerful. It's so much more powerful when it's just that.
Yeah, and they feel it. And I think that's why you see a lot of these artists, they're tortured souls, and music is therapy, and it's a way to express and get out how they're feeling. And I mean, I've heard it several times. I completely agree with it. It's one of those things that this is how you convey how you're feeling. There's a lot of times songwriters and musicians are introverts. They really won't talk much. This is their way of getting out their feelings and expressions.
Yeah, absolutely. And they may not be the most versed in social norms or how to deal with people. That's certainly fair. I've run into my share of well, I'll say that my dad always said, he said, "You musicians are just so weird, son." He said, I've never met a weirder breed of people than musicians. And I said, "Dad, everybody's unique, So he hung out with bodybuilders and bouncers all the time. So I'm sure they had their own what do they call it? Eccentricities. Is that the right
Oh,
word?
yeah. See, I used to bodybuild stuff when I was a kid. That's one of the things I want to do. So you tell them this. You think musicians are weird. Okay, you're standing around in your underwear slapping guys on the ass, talking about their muscles. Now, how's that not weird?
It's a club, man. It's a
It's a
clubbing.
definitely club. I was right there with them. I love that working out, and I got hurt and I broke my back and I can't do all that stuff anymore. But I loved working out and bodybuilding, and that was one of the things that was I wanted to be when I was a kid. I didn't hit music. I could write poems. I started writing poems like when I was in 8th grade to get out of essays, and I was good at it since like 15. But my papa taught me a couple chords. But I was more into sports and weightlifting and football and wrestling. And I want to do something like that. And so yeah, there every genre, whatever you're wearing, wrestling, sport, whatever you're in, has their own unique little club. And yeah, to stand around in your underwear posing for each other is kind of weird. I hate to say it, but it is. Looking back on it, it's like maybe I shouldn't have been like that.
Hey, that's the beauty of podcasts, man, because there's something for everybody, and it's certainly an outlet, and just to talk out ideas and hash out things like we're doing now, and you realize that it really is a club, and if you're in it, you're in it, and if you're not, then you're going to find out real quick that you're not.
Oh yeah, and it's big. And after this come up on the podcast before, as big as a songwriting community is, it's very close. It feels very small because you run into the same people over and over and over because you're all doing the same thing. And you realize that for the most part, songwriters and artists are very genuine people. And what you see is what you'll get. Like I've been trying forever to get Dolly Parton on the show. So if anybody's listening and knows Dolly, put her bug in her ear. Come on, Dolly.
Yeah,
But
man, please.
because
Wish I had the connection.
see, I do know a guy, and I don't know if he's still in touch with her, but I met him years ago. He used to play bass for Joe Diffie, and then now he has the band Trick Pony. His name is Keith Burns. And Keith, you've probably come on so many times on the show that your ears are burning, but hey, I'm gonna name drop, I don't mind. But hey, he was telling me, he was telling his joke one time, dirty jokes to the guys in the band, and Dolly Parton walked up. And so he stopped, and because it was Dolly Parton, he didn't want to insult her. He said she told the dirtiest joke that he didn't care after that. Because she, from what I heard, she's such a great lady, and what you see is really what you get with her.
Heck yeah, man. I can imagine she's definitely kind of enjoyed a resurgence here lately to a newer generation. But I feel like if anything, she's owed the fact that she has endured for so long and has had such a great history and past in this country, not just in music, man, but in film and just part of American culture. I mean, she's kind of like a Betty White type figure, obviously not as old, but but yeah, she's so well-rounded, and you know, that says a lot for her as a person.
Yeah. Now, did you mention earlier that you recorded at Sun Studios?
Yeah, so all the songs on the Memphis Sessions EP that's out right now on Spotify, of course, all the major streaming platforms, iTunes, etc. All of that was recorded live at Sun Studios in Memphis, that historic studio where all that old music was recorded back in the 50s and 60s. You know, Sam Phillips started during the day. I mean, you can take tours of the whole studio, and of course they've expanded it into a gift shop and things, but the recording studio is exactly the same. The control room, all the equipment still there, the walls, the floors, everything is still the same. And at nighttime they shut down and artists come in there and record. Usually they do it till about midnight. We spent a couple days up there recording from about 7 p.m. in the evening to midnight. We went and ate our fill of Memphis barbecue in the late afternoon and went over to the studio. So it couldn't get any better. You know?
That's amazing, because I remember I took the tour. And last time I went to Memphis, I've been there a couple times to go see Graceland. It's changed a lot since I was a kid, but it's still a historic town for music.
It's great, man. I mean, it's from where I'm at, outside of Knoxville, it's still probably four and a half or so hours up, I think, probably away, if not further. And we plan to take another trip out there pretty soon. The instruments in the studio are all those old, all the old Gibson guitars, all the custom shop stuff from when Gibson was out there, that furnished the in-house gear. So you look on the corner and there's a Roy Orbison 335 or a ES-295, like Scotty Moore used to play the old gold top. I think Brian Adams actually plays at ES-295 for all the guitar guys out there, all the guitar people. But that Graceland, of course, we got to do Graceland and see all the civil rights history. And the town itself, and Memphis is growing, and it's really becoming kind of more of a family-friendly place again.
So, that's good. I'm glad to hear that, because when I went, it wasn't family-friendly at all.
Yeah, there's still plenty of places you probably don't want to go in Memphis, but more places where you can go and not have to look over your shoulder.
Well, let's hear another one of your songs, Nathan. Which one you do next?
Yeah, man, let's do Come Home.
Come Home, okay.
The going back to talking about personal experience, excuse me, I actually wrote this song with my older brother, Gus Morgan. He lives out in Johnson City, Tennessee, and he and I were just kind of sitting around one day throwing ideas around. He's never really been a huge songwriter, poet, or anything like that. We were just talking about our dad and growing up with him and what it means as a son, in particular, growing up in a family like we grew up in. And I've said this before, but I was very blessed and very fortunate to grow up with two parents who loved each other very much and they loved us. And our dad was our dad. He kept us in line, kept us in check, taught us right from wrong, but he was also our friend. And so I and my brother and even my older sister, of course, we were all very fortunate to have that figure in our life. And as we both gotten older and grown up and gone out in the world, had families and, you know, become the quote unquote adults that we are. I say it in quotation marks because we still act like kids sometimes, but we think about every once in a while, just, you want to call your dad, you want to have a place to kind of go back home to in your mind. And I say in your mind now, because, you know, our dad's our dad passed away earlier this year in January, shortly after we had written the song. And it was, it makes it even more special now to think about it. So the song tells a story kind of from the dad's perspective, as calling out to your son that, hey, you know, you can always come home and nothing's really changed here. Like, I'm always going to be here for you in one way or another, maybe not physically, but, you know, one way or another.
Yeah. Did he at least get to hear the song?
I don't believe he ever heard the song, actually. Towards the end of his life, he was kind of a recluse, and we didn't get to see him a whole lot or really talk to him a whole lot. We still had a, we had a good relationship with him, but he, after my mom had passed away, just kind of tell that part. My mom had passed away probably about 12 years earlier, and her death was very sudden and very unexpected, and that really kind of killed him kind of internally, in terms of emotionally and mentally. And he just kind of checked out after that, and it was kind of hard on us as kids, you know, because we all had kids, or we didn't have kids at the time that my mom died, but in the years since, it was kind of made it hard for him to be there for us as much as he wanted to be, because he had just experienced such pain with her being gone. So that being said, I don't believe he ever heard the song, but again, it makes it all more important to me, personally, that this song reminds me of him so much, and it was written for him.
And the guys, this, what I heard when you played, this is my favorite when I heard you play it. And I think it's because, and I could tell the passion and the way you, the emotion that came out of you when you played it. So I'm going to shut up and let everybody else hear it, but I've heard this one. You played it live and it was so good, but let's take a listen. I'm going to mute us, Nathan, and play.
I remember when you were just 13, telling me all of your dreams. I just couldn't understand, sometimes I still don't. But the world was waiting and you had made your plan. It's a different time than the one I rocked you in. And Mom's not here to see what could have been. And though you've gone oh so far away, some things don't change, and I just wanna say, so come on home. And talk of all the things that you've seen. This old house is still full of great memories. It's where I taught you right from wrong. And that old room is where you wrote your first song. So come on home. I didn't do it all right. The things I did that kept your mom up at night. I hope there's enough good for you to recall, to pick up the phone and listen when I call. And come on home. Oh, the same, and your mama's picture's still in that old frame. So come on home. Won't you come on? Still my main man. So come on home.
I like that. That like I said, that reminds me. I don't know what made me think of it. I was trying to find the artist, but it's Mark Broussard.
Yeah.
Very smart. Yeah. His song Home is probably one of my favorite songs ever.
Oh, yeah.
I love that.
That's some swamp for you, man, right there. That whole song is great.
Yeah. It brought me that stuff, like him and some Jeff Buckley.
Yeah.
Even Jeff Healey. I was like, oh, because I kept thinking, who's that guy from Roadhouse? And it was Jeff Healey. I had to look him up. I couldn't remember his name.
That's right. You play pretty good guitar for a blind boy.
He sure did.
he's a guy that discovered later in life, man. He, I think he may have passed away before I really kind of got into him. But God, man, like first time I saw Roadhouse, this guy's playing guitar in his lap. Like, this is ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
And like, is that even possible? Of course, you know, you see something like that for the first time, it blows your mind.
Oh yeah, you want to dig into like, oh, let me figure out.
Yeah. Figure out he's a jazz trumpet player, you know, jazz player before all that. You go down the rabbit hole from there.
See, that's what I love about music, how it intertwines with everything. Like you get the blues, it mixes with the country, it mixes R&B, it mixes with the jazz. It's all intertwined. And I know it's when people are kids, they're like, oh, you listen to that music? What's wrong with you? Well, when you get older, you realize that music is exactly the same as your music. It's just a mixture of it's just a mixture of it. There's different things that you do, like maybe a little bit of a different rhythm, a different little solo, like solos, like your rock. Like that song has some great solos in it. I love solos and songs. I'll put multiple ones in there. I don't care. I just love that stuff.
Yeah.
You wouldn't do that in a country song, and you probably wouldn't in a commercial song anymore, but I like it.
Oh, sure. And it all plays a part. Somebody out there has a taste for it. And you know, no matter how big or small the market is, if it does what you need it to do, and it touches all the main things, all the main points, and all the four corners, as you might say, of what you're trying to do, and that's all that matters. You know, whether you're singing to one person or 10,000.
Yeah. See, I told my wife, if I could get 1% of the population just to buy my song, I'll be okay.
Amen, brother.
See, it's 1%, people. Come on, 1% of 8 billion people. What is that? So, I tell you what, that's a, you know, we're going to do quick math, people. I don't like math, but we're going to do quick math. We're just going to go by 1%. And like I said, there's so many styles. You're not going to please everybody. And that's what drives me crazy sometimes about artists and songwriters, is you're trying to please, like, just do the music. That's all you got to do.
Yeah.
So that's 80 million people, 1% of the population.
If they 1% would be okay.
Right. And if they bought if they bought one song for $1.29 on iTunes, it's $103 million. There's my lottery right there.
That's all you gotta do. That's it. It's that simple.
Right. Sounds simple.
You gotta be like one of those kids as a teenager. I used to think, well, if I could just ask 20 people for a dollar, you know, I'd be good. You know, mm-hmm. just for $20 a day. Just ask 20 people for a dollar. Like, hey, you got a dollar? Hey, you got four quarters?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How easy would that be?
Right. And you can do it. Well, you see it because a lot of people sit on the side of the road and they ask for money. Some people actually need help. The ones that don't, you know, they do it. Watch where they walk to. I want to help people, especially, you know, it's Christmas time coming up. You try to help people as much as you can.
Absolutely.
You
know,
give them, if you try to give them food and they won't take it, then you're wasting your time. They're keep on going. But just sure. Just be nice to each other. That's the easiest thing you can do is be nice and try to help your fellow man any way you can. And I remember I was coming out of Walmart, and I was about to head home, and this lady says, are you in a good mood? I'm like, why? She said, I need a ride. I'm like, Okay. I was like, where do you need to go? She's we're just down the street. I'm like, God, I'll help you out. And so this is where it almost bit me in the ass. I'm helping this lady out and I'm driving. She's like, yeah, I just got out of prison. I'm like, shit.
No, Lord.
So luckily beside me, all I had was I had this big ass, because I own a pest control company, is my day job. The one I do, it had like this long ass blade from a screwdriver. So I just kind of casually reach over, keep my hand next to it in case I need to stab this lady for trying to rob me. But she didn't. Long story short, I got her to where she needed to go and dropped her off. And that was just me being kind. You know, that doesn't hurt other people.
Helps you sleep at night, man. That's I feel the same way. If I have it, if I have it to give, I'll give it. Maybe the power to give is more than that. You know, even when you may necessarily not have it, but mm-hmm. Growing up in church, you're hearing all the lessons and what the what the Bible says about kindness goes a long way, regardless of what you believe. That's something I try to be more mindful of, especially as I get older. I just turned 37 a couple weeks ago. I'm still in my 30s. It's kind of weird, but I'm on the backside of 30. But try to keep that in mind, as I go out in public, and just be more mindful and conscious of what other people are experiencing and what they're going through.
Yeah, and I feel sorry for some of these people. That it's such a weird world that we live in now. And to equate it to music style, like when people listen and playing your music, and I've said this before, I really believe every person has one hit. A lot of people have more, obviously you want more, but everybody has that one hit that one song that would do wonders if somebody else hears it. And when you're playing music, it kind of goes back to what we said earlier too, is when you're playing music, it touches people. And that's your job. If your song can make one person feel better, one person forget their troubles for 3 minutes, 4 minutes, however long, part of their day, you've done your job. And that means more than anything in the world.
Absolutely. 100% agree with that. Somebody coming up to me and telling me that, hey man, you did a great job, and I really love that song. Or, hey man, I heard your song on Spotify or something, or somebody referred me to you or something, and mm-hmm. Man, was I blown away. Like that changes my day and changes my outlook. Even if just for a brief second, if I'm having the worst day up to that point, and something like that happens, it changes my whole outlook.
Oh yeah, I had a lady one time. I was playing at a bar in Alpharetta, and I'm playing and she starts crying, and I'm like, I can't stop in the middle, obviously, but I'm like, I wonder why she's crying. Am I that bad? She's crying, poor lady. And then afterwards, this is going to be a funny story, but afterwards, she came up to me and she was like, oh, I love your stuff. She said, your voice makes me cry. And I'm like, usually my voice makes people run, but okay. I'm what do you say in that situation? She ended up giving me $100 tip that night. I'm like, thank you. And then her husband, hey, he got so jealous that she was talking to me. I mean, this guy literally came up to me. I'm sitting there drinking a beer. He's like, that's my wife. I'm a man. You can't talk and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, look, I'm happily married. You ain't got nothing to worry about. I said, but if you can't control your lady, take her on. That's not my problem. But the fact that it touched her is like, as a songwriter, I'm like, all right, I made her cry. But as a human, I'm like, oh no, she's crying.
You elicit that emotion, man. I mean, with that song or whatever song you were singing. And, if you're in a relationship with somebody like that, you want to elicit that emotion regardless of whether you're married or not, or, as her husband, or as somebody's wife. It's like you want to elicit a response from that person. And mm-hmm. when somebody else gets a response with music, it's surprising to say the least. But yeah, that's a good feeling. And thankfully you got a tip out of it too.
Yeah. Because I don't have to listen to somebody run their mouth for nothing. So in that one instance, I got love and I got hate all in the same. That shows you what music does for people.
is there a pot of gold at the end of this rainbow or not?
Well, let's get one more song. We're not quite done with the episode, but I want to get one more song for everybody to hear. And then we'll do a little bit of stuff. We've kind of done it anyway, but I do a little stuff of like 20 question kind of game too at the end. So, yeah, what's the last song you want to share with everybody, Nathan?
I'll tell you what, man. Let's do a fun one. I've got some friends included. Well, I'll say that my wife, Mrs. Morgan, and a couple of friends actually singing on this one for me. And this is a song I actually got to play slide on. Let's do "Hey Sweet Mama." This is a song that I wrote, just kind of a good time song for as many clubs and as bars as I've played in over the years. I've seen a lot of things happen on a dance floor and at a bar, and you know, at a bar, at a booth, at a table. I've seen relationships start. I've seen relationships end. I've seen fights. I've seen makeup. I've seen all kinds of things that you never imagine to see. But you know, somebody walks up to a good looking girl on a dance floor, and you know, the conversation starts right in the middle of the song. So that's what this one is. It's fun and just kind of like I said, just gave me and the band a chance to kind of jam, and it was fun. We recorded this one pretty late at night, so we just kind of take off at the end of this one, but you'll hear it.
It reminded me, we were at a bar, and the band was playing, and Jordan's my bassist, my best friend. He's been with me since the beginning, but our wives knew each other, and that's how we became friends. But we're playing at this bar, and this guy is dancing with these two girls. But the guy is eyeing Jordan the whole time. He won't take his eyes off of him. And Jordan's like, "This guy won't stop staring at me. What do I do?" I'm like, "Give him a show." All right, I'm going to mute us and play "Hey Sweet Mama."
Sweet mama,
hey, sweet mama,
now hey, sweet mama,
hey, sweet
I like
We told the engineer just to fade it, you know, wherever he wanted to fade it. I mean, we probably played another minute and a half or so after that.
that.
That double time, you know.
That's see, I love jam band stuff like the Allman Brothers kind of things. That's so much fun when you're getting into a song and you're in a groove. That's what I love about bands. Singer songwriter, you don't really get to do that. You can't really jam and keep going on because people don't hear it like you do. So, like if you do a song on just doing a guitar, if you just try to play out, it doesn't work the same. But when we have a band and you guys are in that pocket and you're in that groove and you're just playing, having a good time, I could see how you get 7 to 10 minute songs just playing around.
Yeah, you got a lot more to go off of and a lot more energy in the room, especially, you know, you're playing with three, four other guys or more, you know, in case the Allman Brothers or Skinner or somebody like that, the Grateful Dead. There's just everybody's listening to what the other person's doing, and somebody's doing something that's kind of contagious. You're like, oh, let's go with that for a second. And, you know, the drums are doing something. Oh, let's go with that. The bass, you know, you hear the bass kind of pick up a little bit. The guitar picks up. It's just everybody kind of rolls. It's a snowball effect.
Yeah, I have to let you hear something at the end. We did my band did that the other night. I say the other night, it's been a while, but we're doing our album, and I love John Cafferty and the Beaver Brown Band. It's probably one of my favorite bands of all time. And I kind of modeled my band, Yes Ma'am, after it because I love saxophone with electric, and so I wanted to have a battle song with the guitar and the saxophone going back and forth, and we nailed the general idea of it. I just got to get into the studio and do it. But I love that stuff. Like I was listening to yours, and there was a boogie. I love the boogie woogie piano, and I love the stuff like that. It's fun to give the guy because the guys are playing with you all the time. It's fun to give them their moment to shine. Let them do solos and stuff.
No, absolutely. I couldn't be more grateful to all the guys in the band, what they each have contributed. Not only one do they care that, you know, hey, I wrote this song, so I'm going to give it something good to make it better, and to elevate it. Well, maybe not necessarily make it better, but take it to further round it out, to take that idea and roll with it. And one, they give me that time to do that, and they show their appreciation for me in doing that, and they do an incredible service to me, not just as bandmates, but as friends, and that is incredibly important to me.
So give everybody in your band a shout out. I tell everybody, you got anybody you want to give shouts out to, you're more than welcome to.
Yeah, man, absolutely. I appreciate it. The guys on the record, Lee Tyler on drums, he's a Snellville, Lawrenceville, Georgia area guy, originally from Grayson, Georgia. Mitch Chastain on keyboards, that you're hearing on those songs. From Fayetteville, Georgia. He's been a good friend for a long time. And of course, my right arm, and the guy who I've kind of, you know, leaned on and has taught me a lot about the music business on bass, Matt Slaughter. You know, he's been on the road for years playing music with bands and then came back home to Atlanta. And he's been there for me for years, ever since I was a teenager playing with me. He's shown me what to do, and he's shown me what not to do, and he's told me to, you know, what to watch out for. And, what to be mindful of, not only as a musician, but as a human being in the music business. Now the guys that we're playing with out live, buddy John Riley, playing drums for us as well. And also my good friend, Mr. Stephen Mayfield, playing keyboards too. Coming up, we've got a big show at the, well, we can talk about that more later, but the guys who are playing on stage with us now, Lee and Mitch have both got other things that kind of tie them up from time to time. But the guys who are playing with us consistently these days, with Matt, myself, John Riley, he's from Covington, Georgia, and Steve Mayfield, he lives up in the Gainesville area. So we drive all over, come from all over.
Yeah, everything I do is pre-recorded, so I'll let you know before it's released. But do you have like a website or anything like that that will let people know where they can find you, all that stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. First, well, it's really just social media. We share all of our dates, all of our updates, and people can get merchandise just contacting us directly. If they're on Facebook, it's the Nathan Morgan fan page. If you're on Instagram and TikTok, it's at Nathan Morgan Music. And of course, you can follow us on Spotify. You can find all the music on Spotify, iTunes, Amazon, anywhere you download and stream your music. And most recently, we do have the Memphis Sessions EP on vinyl. It's so cool to be able to get this music on vinyl. It's to see it come back as a little kid being able to spin records that belong to my dad, but now have a record file is really cool. So we've got those for sale at all of our shows, and we've got t-shirts and stickers and all the fun stuff, but the vinyl record kind of sticks out to me. It's kind of a what do you call it, a marker of a career, a mark on the career, I should say.
Yeah, it's like always a highlight that I like to have. Like the, what is your end goal? Like there's stuff that like a bucket list of things that I want to do.
Yeah, there you go. A high point. Definitely having a record on vinyl is definitely one of those things that I thought I would never have,
So everybody that's listening, do you, you're a songwriter and artist too. Do you take other submissions or you just like to do your stuff?
No, absolutely. Matter of fact, Kenny Owens, our mutual friend, who is doing amazing things for the songwriter community in the Atlanta area, and an amazing songwriter himself. I'm actually going to be covering one of his songs here soon. We're in the process of learning it. It's a song called Muddy Water.
Oh,
It's
I
kind
love
of,
that song.
yeah, we're going to be covering that one. The first song I ever heard him do was that song. And I was like, man, like, can I please cover that song? And he's like, yeah, man, absolutely. He's like, that's what I do. I just write songs, you know? And I said, well, I'm taking that one and we're going to do something with it.
See, guys, if you don't know what you're talking about, it's Kenny Owens. Kenny Owens is also in the Georgia versus Pennsylvania Songwriter Showdown that starts in February for us. I met Kenny. He did the he did one with Kentucky, and I think the first song I heard him play was "Daddy, You're My Hero." And then he's a great songwriter. He came on the show. He actually came up here to the studio and we talked. And if you guys don't know Kenny, not only is he great singer songwriter, his country is hell, but he used to be a drummer in a rap band in the 90s, like a
That's right.
hardcore rap band. And I was like, really? He went on tour with like Ice-T, and it was
Bonnie
signed
Tyler,
to,
yeah.
yeah, he was signed to Interscope Records. I mean, it was but if you meet Kenny, that's the last person you're gonna think would be drummer for a rap band, but he did. But one of the songs I did, "The Pretty in the Dark," I would play it, and I was over at the time, and he just hopped on the drums, like, "Let me try it," and he hit it. I mean, come on, Kenny, if you're listening, man, you thank you for introducing us. Thank you for doing what you do for the community yourself too, because he is a hell of a songwriter. And we are planning for the Georgia versus Pennsylvania series. I want to get the Georgia artist a venue, and I think I got it lined up. I'm talking to Greg at Mad Life. And we're going to have like all the Georgia side people, because right now it's 8 Georgia versus 8 Pennsylvania. And we'll have them doing like a show, like a songwriter show. And they'll be playing up there in Woodstock. So you, whenever we get that going, you have to come on up there and hang out with us. And if you can, listen to some good music. And Kenny will be one of them.
Yeah, man. Mad Life Stage and Studio in Woodstock. That's an amazing venue. They do a lot of great stuff. Greg and is Carrie Levy still up there?
I'm not sure. I know
Not
Greg.
sure if Carrie's there. I've talked to Greg a couple of times. They're doing a lot of good stuff for great music, and they have a lot of great tribute acts that come through, and a lot of amazing regional acts that come through there. That room is incredible. Back when I was doing a Lynyrd Skynyrd tribute project for a few years, we used to play there once or twice a year. That was always fun.
Yeah, we did the my band did the breaking bands that they do for bands, kind of like the unsigned artists, but it's a we actually won,
Yeah.
so we got free videos of it. So I took the video, and that's how I got to release an EP for our live because of Mad Life and them. So thank you guys
That's right.
for
Yeah.
winning.
Yeah, they do all the video production things too. And they have a great team of guys that work over there in their studio.
Yeah,
And
Steven, I think is their main guy up there. Is there Steve? I can't remember all of them guys, and I'm sorry if I'm forgetting your names, but there's so many people up there. But yeah, they do their own, they record too, so they're on little studio.
yeah, they're incredibly accommodating.
We're going to get into the non-musical side. So this is like a 20
All right.
question kind of game that we do real quick. It's
Yeah.
not totally 20 questions, but it's fun because we've been talking for almost an hour and a half, and we've got to know you a little bit. We know like wrestling, like I do, and you've been playing music, and you're kind of on the blues side. But let's ask some questions that are random and see what comes up.
Let's do it.
I call this the Wheel of Death. Get a little soundtrack. If you could have dinner with one person, who would it be?
Ooh, and you're coming out swinging. Dinner with one person, dead or alive?
Dead or alive?
Let's go George Washington.
Okay. That's the first. Usually it's like, oh, I want to talk to Elvis or I want to talk to him to so and so. George
I love
Washington.
history. Love history.
Okay. My one of the twins, Gibson, he's kind of into history too. He doesn't want to show it now because he thinks it's not cool, but he could tell you every fact about the Titanic. He was into World War II stuff. I mean, he was just, I swear he's like a reincarnation of my father. My dad died in 2005 on his motorcycle. And so they never got to meet him. But when I look at Gibson, he reminds me so much of my dad just because I got the color of the eyes and kind of the curly hair and just the attitude, like the World War II. My dad was a big World War II. I remember sitting in the house having to watch those damn videos he had, black and white of World War II. I was like, Daddy, you know what happened? Why are we watching this?
There's one minute detail you notice every time you watch it.
Oh.
Your son might know this about the Titanic, but the Titanic sank the same week that Fenway Park opened.
Really?
Yeah, that's speaks to not only how old Fenway Park is, but yeah, same week, April 1912.
Yeah, see, he wouldn't know about the baseball part, but he might. I could ask. I could tell him because he sits down and just knows. I can't remember that much. I forget more than I can remember.
Same
That's,
here.
we kind of mentioned it, but what's three things on your bucket list?
Three things on my bucket list. If it could be any three things at this point, I would love to see the pyramids of Egypt. I would love to play a sold out show in a big stadium or a big arena of some kind. And then, gosh, man, I would love to grow old enough to and still be able enough to have grandkids and great grandkids. So
Yeah,
that
my wife is pushing for grandkids from my son. He's 26, so they just got married. I'm like, I'm too young to be a grandfather. See, I'm 46, but she says, no, you're not. You're just the right age. It's like, no, I'm too young to be called grandpa. Or like my dad was called Grumpy.
Yeah, family's a big one, definitely.
What's the soundtrack of your life?
Oh man, the soundtrack of my life. We're going movie soundtracks or
Whatever comes to mind, there's no right or wrong answers on these.
one artist or I'll say we'll throw in. I will say what movies are the sound like what movie soundtracks could be the soundtrack of my life. I will say Forrest Gump, all
Okay.
the amazing music in that movie. Almost Famous. Definitely. Gosh, man, there's a lot of Van Morrison in there too. I'll say an artist, Van Morrison, definitely. And pretty much any movie with John Candy in it. So if you're talking Uncle Buck or The Great Outdoors or all the songs, that was part of my childhood growing up, all those songs.
I love John Candy. His movies were so funny. He ended up doing the third Cannonball Run they called Speed Zone. Did you ever
Yeah.
see that?
No,
Oh, it's so hard. You can't find it now because it was the third Cannonball Run. It was John Candy, Donna Dixon. I don't think many of the original cast was in it anymore, but because it was done later, like we didn't have Bird or didn't have Dom DeLuise or anybody in there, like, but because that's I love the Cannonball Run movies. I love watching those. But yeah, he was
yeah.
in it. He I can't remember who else was in it, but I've been trying to find that movie to buy. You can't. You can buy a European version of it, but for whatever reason you can't find it anywhere else.
So crazy how that is. I mean, it's got to be like a legal thing of some kind or a movie studio like won't let it get
Yeah.
out or something. But they bought the rights and they just shut it down or something.
All right. What was one secret that you kept from your parents?
Probably the first time I drank.
Okay.
They never really found out that I. Maybe they knew and they just never said anything. But I'd probably say, being 16, maybe 15 or 16, and having a beer and feeling like I got away with it, up until now. They just kind of assumed maybe after a certain point, or maybe my dad just assumed that for a certain point, that I have. And he offers me one if I'm at the house or something, when I was in college or whatever. I'm like, no, I'm good, Dad, thanks. But my casual answer may have given it away that I've done it before, But yeah, that was always something that never really came up. So I was able to kind of keep my cool with that. So, you know, drugs and alcohol were never a, hey, are you on drugs or have you been drinking? You know, never had to have that conversation.
My dad always told me that if I wanted a drink, just drink with him. You know, I had a drink with that way. I wasn't out on the road and driving. I knew what it was. He wanted to get me drunk, so I couldn't go out and do anything. I know. I know it's true trick.
That's right.
A couple more questions for you, Nathan.
Yeah, man.
Would you rather have endless money or endless love?
Oh, man, if I say endless money, I'm going to be – people are going to think I'm shallow. I think at the end of the day, man, I would rather have endless love because I feel like you could have all the money in the world and probably still feel alone, even though I don't know what it's like to have all the money in the world. You know, at the end of the day, I just want to come home to my family and just have that circle around me. Something kids are screaming.
I heard that.
Have to edit that one out. You want to come home to the kids screaming, but no, even in the bad times, it's you know, you still can't replace it and you can't change it.
Yeah,
wouldn't trade it for anything in the world, especially money.
It reminds me
anyway.
It reminds me when I was doing I was recording YouTube. My wife is military; she was gone for the year, so I wrote a song called "Please Come Home." And it just turned into, when I first started, it was because I was playing guitar on the bed and you know, you get these little riffs in your head and you're playing them, trying to figure out words to it sometimes. And my daughter walks in, she was probably four, they're four. And she says, "Daddy, I don't like sleeping in wet pajamas," because I was doing the laundry and I guess I didn't dry them enough. So they were still wet.
Yeah.
So I just, okay. The song turned into, it started from there. That's the open line. I don't like sleeping in wet pajamas. And it went from there and turned into a story about, like, I use like experiences from all my different relationships. And I remember doing the video on YouTube, just kind of, you know, messing around, trying to get stuff in. And my son kept coming in and I was playing, "Hey, Daddy. Hi, Daddy. Hi, Daddy." And I just left it in the video. It was so cute.
Oh, I get that too, man. I always get the, "Daddy, what are you doing? I'm writing a song. What are you doing?" "Oh, I'm just watching TV." "Okay." Come back 5 minutes later, I'm in the middle of a part. "Daddy, what are you doing?" Yeah, I get that totally.
You can see behind me, I'm building a studio so I can get away from it. But you know what? Now they come out to the studio and see, "Daddy, what are you doing?" It doesn't change. They're 14. They still do it.
They hear noise. That's it. Yeah.
Yep. I got one more question for you, and then we'll talk a little bit off air. But we got to know a little bit about you, and we're both songwriters. And most people that listen to this podcast, they're songwriters. But what's some good advice that you receive that you can maybe share with everyone?
Always have your ears open. And I don't mean that in a way of always be ready to listen and not talk, but you always want to listen more than you talk anyway. That's just, you know, good general advice, I feel like, for anybody. But there's always a song in something. There's always a song somewhere, especially if you're a songwriter.
Mm-hmm.
Lyrics come when you're least expecting it, regardless of whether you're in your own thoughts or you're listening to somebody else talk, or you're listening to something on the radio, or like we're talking about, our kids saying something, or there's always just a subject matter. There's always an inspiration to be drawn from words. So always have your ears open. Always be on the lookout, I should say, even if you're listening. Always be on the lookout for a good song opportunity. I always talk notes and talk ideas into my phone, or I'll type it in real quick.
Mm-hmm.
Just so I don't lose it, because as quick as you get it, you can lose it. And
yeah.
So a good message to songwriters out there is definitely, you want to listen before you speak, certainly, but always listen for potential. There's always potential for a song.
Well, I mean, like I said, that one I did, "Please Come Home," started with my daughter. Like, I don't like sleeping in wet pajamas. One of my favorite, my wife, she loves that song. A song that I really love, I got from my son. They were, again, like I said, they're twins, so they're about 4 years old. And you know how kids, they get their balloons and they're so happy. You know, you go somewhere, look at a car, whatever you do, and they got balloons. They give the kids balloons and they're the happiest they can be just from a little balloon. Well, you know what happens with kids? They lose their balloons. So I remember we're getting out of the car and everybody had their balloon. And Cheyenne, who's the little girl and my daughter, she lost her balloon. And so her brother Gibson comes over to her and says, because she starts crying. He goes, "It's okay, sissy. It's going to heaven." And I'm like, "Oh, okay." I'm writing a song about that. And I did. I wrote a song called "The Balloon," and it turned into, I'd let you hear it. I can't do it justice. It's one of those songs that I'll never be able to sing. But the whole story is the guy is at his kid's in a hospital and he's dying. You know, because kids, unfortunately, they die, and then songwriters make sad songs. And so yeah. This guy is giving his kid a balloon, but it's a metaphor. The guy is the balloon, and he's holding on to his son as tight as he can while he's on a slow ride to heaven. And it's, I did that song at a, the first time I ever did it, I did it out at a music thing at the Red Light Cafe in Atlanta. And I remember I bought all these balloons and I gave them to people. It's like, I want you to go write the names of everybody, somebody that you lost. And let's go outside and after the song and we'll release them. And that's what we did. And I remember this lady, I'll never forget it because I wasn't going to be part of it. I just, you know, I was singing. I was just something for them because to me, it was such a great idea. I didn't know that people did this, but she ended up writing my dad's name on there and went outside and released it for me.
Oh, wow, man, that's intense.
It's a great song. I just can't sing it. It's not in my range. I can't figure out how to do it.
I hear you. Yeah,
that's one that somebody else has to sing.
That's another advice I'm sure you've given or you've heard said before is, you know, at the end of the day, man, what we do as songwriters is, you know, don't get too deep in your own. Don't go down the rabbit hole too far when you realize that you really just want to write something that connects with somebody. And it can be so simple sometimes. Other times it's complicated. I'm sure, especially when you're trying to write something like that, because you want to get your point across. Yeah. But you also want to think about how other people are going to hear it and how other people are going to perceive it.
Oh, yeah. My son loves it. He said, "Daddy, that's the saddest song. I love that song." He says, "You got to record it." I was like, "Son, you don't understand. The way I wrote it, I can't. I have no way to sing it because I messed up writing a good song that I can't sing. Just got to find somebody to do it." And but it's so sad. A lot of people are like, "I don't want to touch that. That makes me cry just listening to it."
Yeah. I mean, Cats in the Cradle, after all these years, I mean, that still has power, you know, an iconic song like that. But yeah, you've got a song you've written that, you know, one is either hard for you to sing, regardless of whether it's the vocal range or it's the way you want to hear it, you know. But that's the beauty of being a songwriter, is you can still tell the story and put it in the book, even though you may not be the one reading it.
Yeah. And we mentioned it earlier, but I don't think we said anything. So anybody, do you take submissions? If you do, go ahead. And where do you want somebody to send a submission to your song? And what kind of style are you looking for? Because you guys are listening to him, he's more outlaw Southern rock. So you don't want to send him a reggae song.
I'm definitely not going to put a reggae beat to anything in the near future that I can tell, but yeah, please, I mean, if anybody out there has song submissions for me, come one, come all, definitely to shoot them to me directly through Instagram at Nathan Morgan Music, or the Nathan Morgan fan page if you're on Facebook, or even TikTok. I mean, if there's a video of you playing the song or something, it doesn't matter, just lyrics. Anything, please.
Well, Nathan, I want to thank you for coming on the show. We'll talk about it off air, but thank you for coming on the show, and I've had fun.
Likewise, Jesse, thank you so much, and Georgia Songbirds podcast, I really appreciate you having me on, and what you're doing is really great, and you're getting a lot of exposure to myself included, a lot of songwriters out there, and you're giving us a chance to kind of tell our story, so couldn't be more appreciative of that. So thank you.
My pleasure. I tell everybody that's the least I could do. I mean, if I won the lottery, I'd start a radio. I have a radio show, but I'd start like a publishing company or a record label. I'd start a record label and I would sign people to it that are local that you don't hear from. I would ride around and listen. Now the only really caveat I would have is you got to be able to play it live. That's why when you come to the studio, when you sit down, like here on Zoom, I kind of have to do it through like Spotify and stuff because Zoom is weird about recordings. But when you come to the studio, and if you're ever around Georgia, want to come to the studio, you're more than welcome to come back. You play it live. And that's kind of the whole point of songwriters is you got to get your music heard. Sometimes you got to play it. And if you're an artist, you got to be able to play live. If you can't play live, you know, and you write great songs, great. Find somebody else to sing them. That's kind of one of those issues that were sometimes songwriters will get in their own way. Like, "Oh, I wrote the song and I got to sing it." Not necessarily. You got to get it heard. I get it. And you may have to sing it to get it to somebody. That, you know, like Kenny's is a good singer too, but that song Muddy Water that you mentioned earlier is one of my, is my favorite of his, because it is so funny and it's just so catchy.
Absolutely, man. He's a great songwriter, does a great job writing the hook.
Yes, he does.
To say the least. So that, that just speaks to his powers as a songwriter.
Yep.
And a storyteller.
Very much so. Kenny, like I said, you come up a lot on the show and you are, you're an influence in people, whether you know it or not. And Nathan, again, thank you for coming on the show. I've had a blast.
Yeah, Jesse, thank you so much. I appreciate you and your team.
I'd say team. It's just me, brother. I wish I had a team.
Hey, man. One man gang. Team. I like
everybody says, I get that email time. Hey, Jesse, can you somebody for you? Like, it's only me. I said, I wish I had a team. Bye, everybody. That's Nathan Morgan. This is the Georgia Songbirds.